Today, we are honored to sit down with futurist Jim Carroll. Jim shares his experiences and lessons gained over an incredible 33-year speaking career. Jim's clients have ranged from Daimler Chrysler to NASA, and he advises CEOs and C-suite executives from the top companies around the world on future trends, on what is coming and what they need to prepare for in order to survive and thrive. Jim also shares with us how he maintains an incredibly busy schedule of international travel and how he keeps a balance in his life between work and family and what he prioritizes. If you're an executive, if you're a business owner, this one is definitely for you and should not be missed. Welcome to Coffee and Conversations with Champions, the Leadership Edition. Our recording. Fantastic. So, Jim, it is a huge honor. Hang on. You know, I have to be a nerd and do this. It's a huge honor to have you on the show, Jim Carroll, futurist. And you have been world renowned for over three decades. Not to give your age away, and it means a great deal to me to have you on the show. And you've helped me tremendously in nurturing and building my career, and it's meant a lot. Can you tell us a little bit about who you are? Who is Jim?
So I'm a futurist. I focus on tomorrow and trends and things like that. And I've been on the speaking circuit for close to 33 years. Yeah. I've had clients like NASA, like Disney, Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, Mercedes-Benz, you know, just these
PGA
clients where I'm PGA of America. I'm a big golfer, so that was kind of a thrill. Yeah. I mean, I've had a room full of astronauts to advise them about the future of space. I'm, you know, one of those guys who I don't think fit into the traditional career boxes, even though I'm an accountant by background, and really am sort of dragging organizations and their executives kicking and screaming into tomorrow by providing, you know, insight on, you know, look, here's the reality of what comes next and what you need to do about it.
Right, that's absolutely fantastic. What led you into this career? How did you end up as a futurist? And then from that, into speaking.
Total accident. I mean, I'm a chartered accountant, CPA, whatever we're called, you know, this week. I was, you know, with predecessor firms of KPMG and Ernst & Young from 79 to 89, doing audit advisory, business, you know, advisory, taxation, exciting stuff like that. But look, I got online in 1982 on an old Radio Shack computer with a 300 baud modem. The youngsters won't even understand what that is. And so I was probably on the internet, you know, 10 years, 12 years before a good chunk of the population was. And I saw what was coming. And I realized that, look, I'm going to have a lot more fun getting involved in this global technology connectivity trend than I will working with debits and credits. So I just started evolving more into the technology sphere. And it all sort of hit ahead in March of 1994, 30 years ago, when I wrote a little book with another guy about the internet. And it ended up in 3 weeks in Canada. I'm Canadian. It ended up within 3 weeks being a number one national bestseller. And he and I, you know, we were like the Lennon and McCartney of the Canadian internet. We ended up in the 5 years writing 34 books. We sold a million books, just crazy life, TV shows, and I'm on the radio and in the media and newspaper crews coming to my house. And then I got tired of that gig, and I was looking around and realized that I'm talking about trends of the future. So, hey, guess what? I'm a futurist.
Right.
And sort of went from there.
Okay, fantastic. I think we met sort of just during COVID with the platform we're using now called Ecamm. I mean, which was great. But for you, that was quite a big shift because I recall in our conversations where you spoke, you sort of said the focus was more on, for corporate events, on inclusion and all of these, the diversity and these kind of things. What happened? What kept you focused and motivated? Because I think to use an overused term, I mean, you've blown up again, you know, like it's going crazy. Like you're working hard. I mean, you're all, where have you been so far this year, by the way?
I'm a huge fan of optimism, and when COVID hit, I did this. I built a big, green screen virtual broadcast studio in my basement, and I mean, I can flip into my spaceship. I can pull up a different scene. I can jump into a an entirely different thing. I realized within 1 week of COVID, I can sit around and be depressed, and my business of going out on stages and commanding five figure feet come to an end, I can sit around and be depressed about that, or I can reinvent again. And it's actually funny, my sons, who are now 28 and 30, said to their mom, like, what's dad gonna do with lockdown? And she said, well, he'll just reinvent. I mean, he does that,
right?
And so immediately within a week I was building a virtual broadcast studio and migrated to this software called Ecamm Live, which you were using, and we met in a Facebook group where a whole bunch of other sort of digital refugees were meeting up on how can we go virtual.
Right.
And it sort of went from there. So, I mean, I spent, a lot of time in my basement working with a lot of gear, a lot of technology, did a lot of virtual talks. Look, people came to hate virtual keynotes, and I'm now back on the road. I mean, I go to Houston next week. I was in Dublin a few weeks ago, Orlando. I just go back from Hawaii. I go to Houston again, Orlando again. I'm going to be back in Ireland, going to the UK.
Right.
You got to get me into South Africa to talk to some corporate groups. And anybody listening,
absolutely,
hit futurefit.international. And that's where you and I will come in and do a, I'll do a keynote. You'll do a sort of a fitness, mental health mindset, your story talk, and we will rock your corporate world. So I'm back in, in-person events, and it's kind of fun, fantastic, but I still love coming down here into this virtual broadcast studio and doing things.
So where does that mindset and that attitude come from? Because I think it's like times were tough. I mean, I know for us, we lost 70% of our business in one day. Oh, and for you, it must have been a shock.
100%. I mean, I went from having a bunch of confirmed corporate gigs, and you have to understand the fee I get is significant, to nothing. And to me, it was a choice. I decided long ago to double down on optimism. If I'm to be in a world that's going to involve fast change, and I'll talk to a lot of my corporate clients about fast change, I've got to be optimistic. I mean, what's the alternative? I've also been through, a number of different personal circumstances, which have led to, doubling down on that optimism in a very big way. So I think it's part of my psyche. I think it's part of my mindset. And I think it's part of the story that I take to the stage. The look, I observe that, some people see the future and see a threat. Innovators see the same future and see an opportunity. And that's an optimism mindset. It's got to be, if you want to be successful, you've got to decide core number one issue in your mind is you have to have a positive outlook regardless of what is going on.
So is that something, do you feel that you were born with, you've had your whole life? Was it something that you realized you had to develop?
No, I think I developed it over time. I mean, I remember shortly after marrying my wife, and it's, 1989, 88, and I'm in this, firm, and we've, undergone a merger, and, all of a sudden I've gone from, traveling the world, talking about the power of global connectivity and collaboration and sort of pre-internet stuff, to fighting political battles in this bureaucratic company. And I remember taking the train in every morning, into Toronto with my wife, and just like getting into a foul mood. Like, who would want to hire me? What are my skills? What can I possibly do? That was probably one of the moments. I've had a few, where the lowest of the low, and, I sort of figured a way out. I mean, I was able to, quit my job because she had a fantastic career and solid income, and I was able to jump out on my own and make the terrifying leap into entrepreneurship and doing my own thing.
Right.
Did have the good fortune of writing a national bestseller and having life explode from that point.
Right.
There's been a few instances along the way. I mean, post-dot-com collapse, recession of 2001. I mean, my business collapsed. It went like that again. And what we did at that moment in time was my wife and I, took up skiing with our young sons, because I decided, number one, I got to keep my head screwed on right. I mean, I can't sit around and complain about the fact that business has collapsed. Let's, number one, take care of mental health. And from that will flow the optimism, and that will flow from, another business reinvention.
So how important is prioritizing yourself to success?
I'd say it's pretty darn important. I mean, I remember, you know, late 1999, something like this. This is when the dot-com years were blowing up and, you know, people were suddenly becoming millionaires in these stock plays. And
yep.
I had the opportunity to do that. And instead, my wife and I were driving with our sons to Washington to go see the Air and Space Museum, you know, full of spaceships. And I was, you know, realizing that it's more important to double down on being a great dad and, you know, the love for my wife and doing the right things as opposed to chasing the money.
Right.
And I think I've had a few lessons like that along the way, that it's more important to be successful by understanding the roots of your success than to be successful by trying to chase some image of success.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
So it does. I mean, that speaks to gratitude, right?
Oh gosh, yes. I mean, I'm thankful every freaking day. That's a Canadian phrase, freaking. You know, I get up and, you know, these pinch me moments, and I'm 64. I mean, I realize I'm sort of probably on the sunset of my career. You know, if I can get out and do this a good 5 more years or something, I'll be thrilled.
Another 20 at least. Yeah.
With absolute gratitude on yeah. you know, the fact I've done the right things, and along the way I've, you know, mostly made the right decisions. I've doubled down on my optimism and things like that.
Right. So if we talk sort of about what you speak about and what you do, AI is now quite a big part of that. And it's interesting to see, because I see a lot of where we spoke about you coming out here and speaking to companies. I think it's absolutely vital, because to any company in the world, for me as a small business and just running our small team in a couple of the businesses that we do, the prospect of what AI tools to use, how to use them correctly, what are legitimate tools, and it's terrifying and it's daunting. And you put out a post, you shared a video, I think, that you did at the Cattle Barons.
Well, there's the Cattle Barons, 3,000 cattle ranchers, you know.
Yeah, the cattle ranchers. Yeah. So, you know, you spoke about finding, you have to pick a partner, you have to find advisors, the right guys to work with. I mean, how important is that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm spending a lot of time talking about AI. The thing is, most people, most companies, most CEOs are not focused on the right thing when it comes to AI. I mean, everybody's talking about ChatGPT and these image generation tools and stuff like that. And that's important, but it's not everything that's going on. That's why I keep focusing on, if I pull it up here, the AI megatrends. You know, these are the big, substantive, long-term transformative trends.
Right.
I can move it over. I've got the capability to do that.
Yeah.
Which truly define our world.
Okay.
These are things like machine vision, robotics, know, the ability to completely transform our business. Well, I've been talking about the AI megatrends, which go beyond ChatGPT, and, you know, where is AI going to take us, you know, 2 years out, 5 years out, 10 years out? And so, for example, I'm in Houston next week with a big, massive insurance conference, a whole bunch of CEOs. And I'm going to be talking about the fact that, you know, really where AI takes us is in the insurance industry, is it turns it completely upside down. We're going from a world in which we underwrite insurance based on what you did in the past, so past driving behavior or urine test, blood test for life insurance, to underwriting people in real time. I mean, if I got a blood pressure cuff and I've got a diabetes monitor, if I had, you know, blood glucose, and, you know, if you're monitoring my health in real time and I'm showing good numbers, you will underwrite my life insurance based upon that real time information. If I'm driving,
wow,
you're going to underwrite the car based upon my exact current driving performance. That the insurance industry completely upside down. And the same type of thing is happening in every single industry. The thing is, with so many CEOs and senior executives focused on ChatGPT and, you know, how do I search, and
yeah.
And that's cool, but that's not the biggest part of what is happening out there. So I'm, you know, last year, a lot of organizations were bringing a lot of speakers who did cool little talks on, here's ChatGPT, look at the cool things you did. Mm. We're realizing, well, this is bigger than we thought. The Jim Carroll guy's putting in perspective, let's bring him in.
Right. Absolutely. It's because also, I think you spoke quite a bit about the speaker industry, the event industry, and how that is going to be affected and changed. And it's quite interesting. Yeah.
I missed you briefly there. Your voice dropped it.
Oh, so the just where you spoke about the speaking industry, the event industry, and how AI is going to help alter that and change that and empower better production and better content.
I think that's sort of a thing beyond AI. I mean, AI is playing a role in that, but I mean, I had this post where I was talking about the Taylor Swift effect. Look, I've got two daughters-in-law and they're Taylor Swift fans, and so I've become a Swiftie, you know. She's a remarkably smart, intelligent businesswoman. But if you look at the Eras Tour and you look at the staging and you look at the presentation and you look at the performance and you look what's happening with the younger generations going to conferences, I mean, they zone out in the first 2 minutes if you're not engaging and interactive. So you've got to work really hard if you're doing any type of corporate event or association event or conference convention event to draw the attention of people. I call it the Taylor Swift effect. Yes. And we've got to have the best, we've got to have the best, you know, production. We've got to have the best content. You've got to be engaging. And the same thing holds true for virtual. I mean, that's why I can, you know, jump in my spaceship and, you know, talk from here,
right.
You know, to, you know, turn into completely different things, you know, utilizing the magic of all this technology. The world is changing. Attention spans are collapsing. People think differently. They act differently. And, you know, regardless of who you are and what you're doing, you've got to align to that reality. I mean, it's, you know, and here I am, you know, while we're talking, perfect example of what's going on. I'm sitting here, an email came in and I'm zipping off, you know, while I'm talking to you to look at the email. How rude is that? But that's the nature of our world today. When I'm on stage, yeah. Right. I mean, I can see people looking at their phones. And so I'm going, yep. How can I make those phones a part of my presentation by doing some text message polling, for example.
Right. So how, on that point, how dangerous is it for CEOs and execs, your C-suite guys, to be following the trends that are popular, like ChatGPT, where they're giving all of their attention to that?
Oh, very dangerous. Look, my phrase, a guy like me is a phrase machine. Here's my favorite. We are now in a situation in which companies that do not yet exist will build products not yet conceived, using materials not yet invented, with methodologies not yet in existence, with embedded AI intelligence,
right.
That is still being defined. I mean, that's the reality for any CEO. It doesn't matter if you're insurance, if you're banking, if you're manufacturing, if you're agriculture, if you're some sort of science-based product organization, food, consumer products. I mean, there's some guy or some lady in a garage right now who's going to reinvent your entire business model with AI at the heart of it. And it doesn't involve necessarily ChatGPT and the cool trends. It involves the big AI mega trends. And so that's what I've sort of been out there preaching. And I think that's what more and more people are starting to pay attention to.
Okay. Because this can, I mean, you know, sort of be as devastating to companies as cell phones and portable cameras were to Kodak. I mean, you can disappear very, very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, you could be Blockbuster right now and you're in that zone of complacency that you're not really thinking about what comes next. And that's why more and more of my events are corporate events where the CEO is starting to realize they've got big issues. They've got to, you know, educate their team, come up with a real plan. So, I mean, in Dublin, I was with a global pharmaceutical clinical trial company. I mean, they did the clinical trials for Pfizer, for the BioNTech Pfizer vaccine. They realize AI is going to fundamentally change their industry. Mm-hmm. And they realize they either should be the ones to define the future of the industry as it will be around AI, or they're going to be a follower. And so they found me and brought me in to give the opening kickoff to get them in the right mindset for this big, you know, global corporate event that they had.
What is the results that you're seeing talking to people about this, talking to the CEOs, the C-suite execs? What is this having on them, this effect, sort of before the talk, you talk to them and afterwards? What are they saying to you sort of at the cocktail party?
I can point to organizations that get it. I can point to organizations that do not. I mean, I've got one company I'm watching that, you know, I went in sort of with a message that you could be Amazon. I mean, you're a wholesale business and, you know, you could be in a situation in which, you know, what you are selling, an Amazon type company could come in and do it in with a different business model. They're not doing well. They didn't listen. The CEO was complacent, full of hubris, you know, full of a sort of an arrogant mindset. I look at NASA. I mean, look what, you know, what happened last week where this private commercialized space company landed on the moon. And when I was with NASA, the topic was the commercialization of space. And, you know, I mean, the mindset, the first time I went in there was their mindset was only the Russian, Chinese, and Americans are in the space industry. Some of them could not conceive that there would be hundreds or thousands of commercial space companies that would get in the business of space.
Right.
And looking back, I think the senior leadership team at NASA did come to understand that in a very significant way. I've been with automotive companies that, I look at them, Chrysler, Daimler Chrysler, which was the merged entity of Mercedes and Chrysler. I mean, there's a lot of car company executives who are just in denial. New York Times had a post just this morning that essentially Chinese electric car manufacturing companies are going to obliterate Detroit and Stuttgart and Tokyo car manufacturing companies. Probably true, because they're in that zone of complacency.
Right. How do you keep your energy up? I mean, you've got incredible energy, incredible vitality. I love seeing your morning pictures. You're up early. What time do you start your day? How do you keep that energy and that passion and that drive? Because I know you say you're in your 60s, but you come across as someone who's in their 20s.
Yeah, I'm gonna pull up a picture. I'll give me a second here, and I'm gonna pull up the picture of what I sent you this morning.
Yes.
Here I am at. There I am. There's my M&M moment at 6:15 this morning.
Right.
What time are you up? You're like 4:30. I look at your post and it's like, whoa, next person. I'm a 5 a.m. person. I mean, I discovered the beauty, the joy of, chasing the sunrise and the sun rising in splendor, as they say. And it truly has transformed my view of the world. I mean, I get out there for a 7-8 kilometer walk every morning as the sun comes up, chasing the sunrise. And I just sort of sets the tone for the day.
Right.
I used to be someone, waking up later in the day and full of thoughts and recriminations and, what happened the day before. I'm away from that now.
Yeah.
Absolutely wonderful. And I think, I'm using a lot of that time rather than rushing into work. I'm using a lot of that time to think about what I need to be thinking about.
Right, 100%. How do you balance your sort of work life? Because I think, when given what we've been through with COVID and when things shut down and suddenly where business picks up and, people are realizing the value that you can bring, so you're in tremendous demand. But how do you make sure that you're not overworking? What do you use as your yardstick for balance?
Her name is Krista. She's my wife of 34 years. When I was young and stupid, I was doing 3 or 4 events a week. I'd be in San Diego and then LA and then, Phoenix and then Las Vegas. And, I'm on stage and I'm burning out and not delivering the top performance I could have. And, that came to an end. It had to come to an end because it was not going well for a certain period of time. She helped convince me that, look, you're 64, buddy. You can't do that anymore. You also manage it through your feet. I mean, it is not inexpensive to bring me in. If you look at my client list, if you look at my track record, you look at the organizations that are booking me. It takes a very significant investment to bring me in. The client list shows that organizations find value in the investment. So, it's a number of things, but it's probably having a good grounding with family and life balance and outside activities, outside work, and all those things.
Right, 100%. So in terms of where you are, because you're very high up in terms of your fees and what you charge, and obviously with the value that you deliver, how did your career start and how did you get there?
I was one of those weird people. So I graduated university just short of the age of 19. I was a weird kid. They kicked me out of grade 2, I guess, because I was causing trouble, so they put me in grade 4, and I had stuff like that happening. So
were you correcting the teacher?
Maybe I have a few little brain cells up there. So I jumped straight into a career as an accountant. I was a Canadian chartered accountant at the age of 21, and did a lot of stuff, accounting, advisory, tax, business advisory, which gave me a firm business background. When I go in with a CEO, I do understand business strategy, financial, all that stuff, but it was the discovery of what was happening with technology in 1982 that, really defined my future. It's like that moment when Steve Jobs spoke to John Sculley, who was the CEO of Pepsi. Do you want to sell sugared water the rest of your life, or do you want to get in the ground floor of something that is going to transform society? And I think that's sort of the mindset as I had. And I have friends saying, what are you doing throwing away a perfectly good career as an accountant? Like, getting involved with this computer stuff, it's not going to go anywhere. And well, actually, it sort of did.
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit. So, it was making some good decisions along the way.
Right. Okay. And they, did you set sort of your value based on what you knew the value that the your fee based on the value of what you knew you were delivering? Because I think for a lot of speakers,
think about a 33-year career, Nick. I mean, I played the clubs. I mean, I had a lot of things in, you know, small events in Iowa, small events in Saskatchewan, Canada, you know, with 50 people in the room. And you know, when you get to a, you know, an event where you're on a stage in Las Vegas, I can probably pull up an example clip and your name is up in, you know, big lights. That doesn't happen overnight.
Yes.
You know, that takes years. So if I show you this, I've got this one clip where I'm walking on stage to this massive conference. You ever notice that you can never find what you're looking for when you're looking for it?
Always, particularly on a Mac. But,
well, no, it's just I didn't have this queued up right. So here I have. Mm-hmm. So if I I'm going to pull this in. I'm not sure the sound is going to come through, but give me a moment, and you know we'll see what happens. So I'm going to go to a blank screen. It's going to go green for a moment.
Cool.
Then I'll drag it in, and this is how weird my life became all of a sudden. Oops.
Yep. Oh, there we go. Yeah. Wow.
I mean, you know, that's what happened with me. I you know, remember walking out on that stage. It was Burger King's Global Franchise Conference. They actually had Leonard Nimoy as Spock in the night before, so they built him the bridge of the Enterprise. And I remember backstage and thinking, like, wow, it's finally happened. That was in 2009, and that's when things really began exploding, and I could command a very significant fee.
Okay, that's absolutely fantastic. Jim, just, you know, I know we pressed a little bit for time, but for you, what sort of three things would you advise CEOs, C-suite execs to keep an eye on, to look out for? And maybe that's not looking at something while looking at something else.
I'd number one, watch the next generation. You know, I mean, my sons are 28 and 30. They live in a different world. You know, any industry, it's the, you know, the 25-year-old who's grown up in a different era, different time, different world. You know, watch what they're doing, understand what they're doing, because they think, act differently.
Mm-hmm.
Watch the people in the garages, watch the edges. You know, a lot of the innovation and the trends in the that are defining the future are occurring out there in the ubiquitous garage. And kill your organizational sclerosis. I mean, a lot of organizations are stuck. You know, I have a joke I tell on stage. I think in a lot of organizations, there's people who wake up in the morning and the very first thought that comes to their mind is, what am I going to do today to kill great ideas? I use it as a joke, but it's probably true. I have a lot of organizations that are stuck in rut. And, Nick, my goal is to get on a stage with you over in South Africa. So hit us up at futurefit.international. I think that's the right website. And, you know, that's where they can discover that you and I can come in together and do an absolutely fascinating little talk.
100%.
To help them do the right things they need to do to align to this faster future.
You know, I think it's so vital, because I've seen I spent 15 years in financial services, and I've seen how those industries have changed when Liberty launched its franchise model, how many franchises there were that no longer exist, and just guys stuck in how it was done 20, 30 years ago. And not as a sales pitch, but as a perfectly frank pitch. In investing in you doing a talk by a company is an investment ensuring that they're going to be around potentially in five years, because that's how quickly things move. Oh, fantastic. Let me just move that out of the way.
I know you and I have talked about this for a long time, and I am stunned by the complacency that exists out there with a lot of organizations. I'm stunned by how many organizations that thinks the way they're doing business today or the business model they have in place is what is going to exist tomorrow. That's not true. And the fact is, change is happening faster than ever before. So you need to align yourself to that reality. So, you know, hopefully we can get together at some event.
Yep. Absolutely.
You know, I know insurance is one, you know, insurance banking is one of your biggest sectors over there. And yes, look, I'm headlining a massive conference in Houston next week. I've got CEOs of most of the major world insurance companies in the room. And my message to them is the future belongs to those who are fast and, you know, are prepared to make big, bold moves. That's what organizations need to do.
Absolutely. Your responsibility to your staff is to move fast. You know, that's, to look after them. You know, that's a fantastic point to end on. I really do appreciate your time and thank you so much. And I'm just going to end the recording and then we'll chat quickly. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate you being here.